Hello and welcome to The Sports Doctor. I'm Chris Fox, joined by Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist on Trade Street in Aurora and author of the Sports Doctor blog. Check it out at chicagonow.com/sports-doctor. Hello, Dr. Weil.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks for participating in this 20th year of ours here at WDCB, believe it or not, in the year 2013, and I'm excited having somebody to help us celebrate that. We've got Rick Tellender, the famous, he calls himself Scribe, head sports writer, Chicago Sun-Times, long history with Sports Illustrated, and author of, is it eight books, Rick?
It's nine.
Nine books. I knew I was close. One of the true leaders in all aspects of writing about sports and life. Rick, thanks so much for joining us again. It's been 6 months since you were on. Welcome back.
Wow, it seems like yesterday, Bob, but always a pleasure to do it.
Yes, I know you. Rick is on the train. Sounds like pretty good reception on the way downtown. Rick, you just got back from the Super Bowl. That was an exciting game. What was the experience like besides the lights going out? How'd you enjoy the game?
The game was seemed like it was going to be a rout, and then the lights went down, and then all of a sudden it became possibly the most exciting game I've ever been at. The difference between the two halves was extraordinary, and the comeback by the 49ers was really, really exciting. And the trouble is, as a writer on Deadline, all you're looking for are blowouts, so you know exactly what you're going to write about. And this game came down literally to the last play up for the 49ers, so we didn't know who was going to win.
Right.
So,
they call that thinking on your feet?
You know, one thing I have to tell you, there have been so many Super Bowls in New Orleans, and it's just a great place for Super Bowls, as you might expect. It came right in the middle of Mardi Gras, so they actually kind of turned off Mardi Gras, and then the day everybody left, the day after, they were starting up again, cranking it up, get the parties going again.
Oh, I heard about that. Weren't you running around with some beads around your neck?
Yes, I am. Yes, that is true.
You're lucky. You're a lucky guy. Now, I know, Rick, you had knee replacement, both knees replaced.
Yes, I did.
Was it in November, I remember?
It was November 27th, not like I remember.
Right, okay. So you must be doing quite well. Talk a little bit about that and that experience, because you must be doing quite well. You went to the Super Bowl, but how was that experience with both knees being replaced?
Well, it actually, like everybody knows, it's a tough surgery, but it's one that when you have it, you know you need it, and you think back on, before you had it. It usually is pretty grim. I had been at the worst part was being at the Olympics in London with knees that could barely, handle it. And I was with Rick Morrissey, my, compatriot, fellow sports columnist. And I'd say, Rick, take my bag, and we're going up these long steps from the tube, as they call it. And, there I am staggering. And when you start having 18-year-old pretty girls say, sir, can I help you with your bag? It's time. Or, sir, can I lend you a hand? And it's not because, they want to go on a date. It's because they have pity for you. You better start doing something. My knees were bowing out at a tremendous rate. It was funny. I looked like an old cowboy. And went in and had the surgery, which I knew I was going to have sooner or later. I'd known it for, I'd say, 10 years. And
yeah, you and Joe Namath.
Yeah.
He had both his knees done. Now, who was the doctor who did your procedure, Rick?
His name is David Stolman.
Okay.
He's from Northwestern downtown. And then I have the orthopedic arthritis specialist. There's a woman named Dr. Victoria Brander. She's just amazing. And
at least you got a chance to go to your alma mater.
Yeah,
Stick with the Wildcats.
They couldn't have taken, taping 101 and, keeping seaweed out of the outdoor arena. So they probably had to take real courses, and they probably had to really study. So my hope was they were good doctors, and they turned out to be very good doctors.
Yeah, so far, so good.
The legs are straight, and I gained about an inch in height, which I don't want to say gained. I got back an inch of my own.
Right. Stand up straight, Rick.
So what's the outlook? Are you going to be able to run and jump and dance like when you were 20 years old?
you know, do like the alligator across the dance floor like I used to do. I'm curious as to see how this goes. It's been about, let's see, it's just December, January. It's been 2.5 months. And, you know, they say you keep improving up to like 6 months. It really, you know, I can walk normally. I can go up and down stairs fine. I can moonwalk. I can do all that stuff. It's still, I've missed my therapy, which I'm supposed to go to, you know, which is mostly just strengthening all that stuff. And then
that's key. That's key. You got to keep that up. You know, this is one of the most successful surgeries we see. Post-op and joint replacement is knees, and you're running pounding jumping days, probably a very limited or over, but golf, walking, doing all sorts of other activities.
Yeah.
You should really, really be in good shape, but I don't know if I would
That's
want you jumping for rebounds at this point in time. You know, Rick, everybody is so familiar with a lot of the things you've done, but would you please just talk a little bit about maybe some of the books and some of the Sports Illustrated and even Sports Writers history, that your illustrious history that you've been involved with?
Well, it's been a long one because I'm getting up there, Bob. But anyway, you know, I played football at Northwestern on a scholarship, and then after that, I wanted to get into writing, so I was lucky. I mean, I freelanced for a long time writing stories for Sports Illustrated, you know, just hit or miss. And I also worked as a, you know, as a waiter at a restaurant, and I played in a band. So, you know, I wasn't trying to make $1 million. And I
can't. Now, you tried out for the Chiefs, didn't you?
Yes.
Didn't you go to their camp, Kansas City Chiefs?
Yep, I got drafted, and Hank Stram, after enough time in camp, said, you know, called me in and said, Rick, you know, why don't you, maybe it might be time to think about that other career of yours. And so that was the end of pro football.
Do you put a curse on them because they haven't been back to the Super Bowl?
Right.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, when I went there, they were a year and a half from winning the Super Bowl. They'd won it. And they had about 8 Hall of Famers on their team, including, you know, Len Dawson and Buck Buchanan and
Curly Culp, who just got in.
Yeah, and they have, you're right, they've been cursed. They should have kept me.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Right. That, absolutely, for sure. I would think that would have been a... would have been a good idea. So I know that you did things at Sports Illustrated. The talk a little bit about your books, some of these excellent books.
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, they've kind of followed along with the topics that were important when I was writing for Sports Illustrated. I wrote for them for, you know, off as a freelancer for about 7 years, and then as an actual staff employee, a senior writer for about 13 more years. So it's like 20 years there, and then I've been at the Sun-Times for 18 as a columnist.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. No, you know, it's...
We should be celebrating your anniversary. Forget me.
You should.
Right.
You know, I walk around now singing that Beatles song when I'm 64.
Right.
that applies, because I turned 64, and I still feel good with these new knees, man. I feel like I'm no older than 54.
Well, my old friend Eric Soderholm, you know, the old White Sox hitman, he raved about the results he got with his longtime knee pain. The knee replacement was magic for him. You know, you're listening to The Sports Doctor here on 90.9 FM. I'm Dr. Bob Weil, sports podiatrist, here with Chris Fox. Another great show. We're talking with the Sun-Times head and co-head sports writer, Rick Tellender, author. And we are having a great conversation with a lot of different topics. If you want to listen to some past shows, go to sportsdoctorradio.com, and you can get an earful in one way or another. So you got around the Super Bowl doing real, real well. You know, there's so much hoopla, Rick. You've written about it a lot. You're one of the champions of it, the concerns of brain trauma, the concerns of, you know, where's football going? And, you know, Bob Costas came out with a comment where he said, boy, at the present, the way it's played, I think it's unsustainable. And Jim Nantz talked about something else. What's your thoughts now? What was some of the buzz going around, if any, when you were down in New Orleans and you being in the middle of the football world?
Well, this is the first Super Bowl I've been at in which people were truly thinking about the head trauma that's occurring. And I actually, it's also the first time I saw a slight change in tackling. Not on everything, but on certain tackles. I saw really good tackles where guys use their shoulders instead of their helmets. There were still some really, really nasty hits. And I know people in the stands and sports writers are thinking about, okay, does that mean this person will, you know, develop CTE, the chronic traumatic encephalopathy, down the road. What does it mean? What about Ray Lewis, who's retiring? He played 17 years. Is this guy going to be, you know, a lot of people don't like him already, but is he going to have brain issues? And we, you saw that the game still is fundamentally a problem, as Bob Costa said, and as Jim Nantz seemed to try to dodge by saying that women's soccer, I think you get more head trauma than in football. The truth of that is we don't even describe concussions in football. We don't even know what they are. Some players will say, well, I get 10 a game. If you want to count get seeing stars,
see, that's one of the major keys, Rick, is the fact that there's all sorts of hoopla about concussions with a capital C. But whether it was sure. Junior Seau, who never had a necessarily diagnosed concussion, the question is the micro trauma. And the question yep. also is the big if. Nobody knows. It seems the only football players that we hear on TV, the pundits, all seem to be doing quite well, to say the least. And the ones that don't, you don't hear about. But it's interesting how it's now part of the main discussion. I don't know. I just don't know if there's a safe way to tackle where the head's not blasted around, because the problem is the whiplash and the brain getting jarred around.
You know, your head's in the middle of your shoulders. I've always said that's the biggest problem with football. If you could just take your head up and put it there on the sideline and then play the game. But you can't go back to arm tackling, because you'll dislocate your shoulder. You'll just tear your right out of its socket if you try to tackle Adrian Peterson. And it is the subconcussive hits. We don't know about that. Could there be genetic factors? There's a doctor here in Chicago, Julian Bales, with another guy from UCLA. They've come up with a way they believe that they can determine for the first time the CTE, if it happens to exist in a living brain. Now, you know, this is just very, very early tests.
Yes, that's going to be interesting. How are the size of the players? You know, when you tried out for the Kansas City Chiefs,
oh my God.
And we remember the Kansas City Chiefs being a big,
and they
strong,
were a huge team.
They were huge.
Huge team.
Could any of those guys make the team? I mean, what's the difference in the size? It's quite...
Well, they would all have to gain probably 30 or 40 pounds.
Wow.
You had Buck Buchanan, who I think was 6'7". But he weighed like 275. Now he'd weigh 340. And I counted the plus 300-pounders on the two teams, on the 49ers and the Ravens, and there were 23. And then if you added the players who weighed over 260, you added about another 10. So you can see, you know, out of 106 total players on both teams, that was, 30, 40 of them were over 260 pounds. So the whole 20% over 300 pounds, and it's not just fat. You used to get 300 pounders, the random one. I mean, Sherman Plunkett weighed 300 pounds way back in the day in the 60s, but he was just fat, and everybody kind of laughed at him. But that's not the case now. These guys are, it's not just the size, it's the speed, it's everything. I'd asked Paul Tagliabue, I believe it was, or maybe it was Roger Goodell, when he was in at one of the media days, if they would put a size limit, a weight limit on players, or at least do something about the experience.
I remember you talked about that a long time ago. It seemed to hit a wall of silence.
They just laughed it off.
Yeah.
Disregarded it. But I'm telling you, there's no need for any human being to weigh over 300 pounds, ever. I mean, I don't care if you're 7'6". You know, Shaq weighed over 300 pounds, but he admitted he was heavy, he was fat. And if you can't diet down to 295, I mean, somewhere we're going to have 400-pound linemen. We had a 260-pound fullback in this game, was running the ball quite a bit. And, I mean, just to tackle him, you're going to hurt yourself.
Now, our friend Matt Chaney, who does the Matt Chaney blog, and you know him well, he wrote
great guy,
Spiral of Denial, and he's really, he is really aggressive with this, but he's
very aggressive.
Yes.
He's taking the side of, he's that gadfly, that revolutionary who throws the bombs, and you need people like him. He's right there in the front with the pitchforks and the torch saying, we must change, this can't go on. There's a lot of fraudulent concussion tests. There's a lot of people who say it'll be okay. There's people like Jim Nantz that say that women's soccer is more dangerous than football.
And I think a big point, Rick, that Matt brings out is that many, many doctors that he quotes are convinced there's just no way that an adult male could put on the kind of weight that we've seen put on naturally period. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much you lift weights. I don't care how much your diet changes. And this is another one of these under-the-cover secrets with the human growth hormone and all of these other things.
Yeah.
And, of course, your positions are well-known. When it comes to drugs and sports and performance-enhancing drugs. I think I remember your a column a month or so ago with the Hall of Fame. You said you would never, ever vote for any of these guys who you felt were tainted with any of these drugs.
Yeah, I just had to take a moral stand there. At some point, you just have to draw the line somewhere, or else what you end up with is this kind of moral relativism where whatever is okay. And if everybody's doing it, that's fine. But I think we saw with Travis Tigert, the head of the USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, what he said about Lance Armstrong. Well, Lance Armstrong said, well, yeah, okay, I was taking all these drugs, but so was everybody else. And Tigert said, well, that's just simply not true. And whatever they were doing, they were also cheating, and they were not cheating as well or with as much information.
With as much sophistication. As a doctor, though, Rick, I have a lot of concern about what I've written and talked a lot about on The Sports Doctor, which is the definition that I call performance surviving, that the schedules, the demand of high-end college and professional sports are virtually next to impossible to hold up physically. And this is one of the major concerns. Nobody wants to cut back on games. Nobody wants to cut back on the size of these guys. And it's really, really a concern. Again, we're talking with Rick Tellender, the famous 18 years in running Chicago Sun-Times sports writer. You know, we just saw one of the most, in sports medicine, Rick, one of the most incredible phenomenons we've just watched. His name is Adrian Peterson. Not only coming back from the damage in the ACL surgery, and I did a red-eye radio interview a couple of weeks ago at 3 o'clock in the morning talking about RG3 and his surgery. What's your thinking with Derrick Rose and how they should handle it and how it's being handled with his potential return this year?
Well, you know, you brought up Adrian Peterson, and it's funny because it's almost a negative to that in that it makes people think, holy shit,
right,
you can have major knee surgery and come back and be the best player in the NFL after 9 months? I mean, it's so crazy. The ligaments, I mean, you know, Doc, ligaments and things don't even necessarily heal for a year. I mean, I had a partially torn Achilles years and years ago, and, you know, I just had to rest it and what have you. There's very little blood flow there, but it took 2 years before it had fully recovered. Now, I didn't get exceptional treatment, but it was the slowest thing there was, and now it's fine. To think that Derrick Rose could be back, he hurt his knee in the playoffs last year. I think, was that May or was that...
Right,
yeah, around May. Surgery in May.
Okay, surgery in May. So we're still looking at February, March, April until we even get to a year. I almost had... felt that you should just take a year off.
I agree. I talked about it a lot, and I got a lot of arrows shot at me because I really felt, I mean, he's a young kid. He's truly a superstar. He's so explosive in so many ways. And to jump back in when they might be battling for a playoff spot, there's a lot of pressure. It's a real iffy question. It'll be interesting to think. I think the consensus is he's probably going to come back. But we might be looking at March and April when the playoffs are on time. And if you remember with Derrick, you know, first he had a turf toe, then he had his back problem, then he had a groin thing. It was always something. I think that had a lot to do with eventually that knee going out on him. So I would really, really love to see them be even more cautious. But
they talk about the timetables. Is there a different timetable for that injury in basketball than there is in football?
That's a great question.
I know that he's going crazy waiting.
Yes.
It's got to be the hardest thing in the world for a kid who's just, was he 23, 24, and he wants to play so badly. But, you know, as you pointed out, he had all those other injuries, and he's in a position, point guard, where you can't take it easy. I mean, you can't, if you were a power forward, maybe you could come down the floor a little bit slower, or you could post up a little less. And if you were a small forward, maybe you just don't do some moves. Or you don't run around quite as much. But if you were to play, he's the guy, he's the straw that stirs the drink, and he's just got to move like crazy. And he's going to put his entire body under complete total stress, as you know. And, I mean, God love him. I hope he can do it, and I hope they make the right choice.
It's definitely going to be a challenge. You know, we see with how old I am is, you know, I'm watching Joachim Noah, and his dad, Yannick, the great tennis player, came to see us at Bob Guida's. I think when you talked about not getting, you know, the aggressive care, I thought that's when you were going to show up with your Achilles 20 years ago, maybe at Guida's. So Joachim, who is a exciting, tremendous player, you know, he's got this. One of the most common things we see in sports medicine is this plantar fasciitis, this arch and heel concern. You know, Rip Hamilton missed, a month and a half. And Joachim, who had a similar injury on the other foot last year, tried to get back, tried to play through it. He ended up missing lots and lots of games. He's trying to be a lot more careful. You know, but the Bulls are like the walking wounded, and that's even more pressure. You know, they're all walking around wondering when Derrick Rose is going to come back. You know, in this day and age of super sports, it's awfully tough to hold somebody back, and it's going to be interesting to see how that happens. You know, you're an alumnus of Northwestern.
I want to say one thing, Bob. You brought up the, you know, the plantar fasciitis and that. It seems to me, as I look back on that, I remember Tony Kukoc had real problems with that.
It's, yes.
You know, it seems to me, and Bill Walton, it seems to be a injury particularly prevalent for these really big men. Paul Gasol just went down with some kind of fasciitis.
Yeah, he tore it. He'll be out probably a couple of months. That's not
this,
good.
Yeah, you know, that's a bad injury for him. And these guys are so big, you don't see it as much with the smaller men who weigh closer to 200 pounds or maybe, you know, closer to 6 foot two, 6'4", 6'5". I don't know that for a fact, but it seems that way to me. And I would just guess when you're huge, you know, the amount of stress you're putting is all there on your foot.
Yeah, an extreme might be when you think of, remember Yao Ming? You know, he was 7'6", 7'7", from China.
Yep.
Again, you mentioned Bill Walton, one of the greatest ever. Bill was always played with foot problems, foot ankle. And once that starts, with somebody that big, it becomes a real nightmare. And that ended up shortening not only Mao Ying's career. Yes, absolutely. We would see. And basketball is so explosive. Again, we've had contests on the Sports Doctor before. I think we asked you 6 months ago, you know, which sports require the best athletes. And, you know, basketball is right up there when it comes to, you know, everything you have, changing direction and jumping and full speed sprinting. And there aren't many athletes that are more demanding than the NBA. So when a foot goes down and a foot's a problem, then you've got something really going on. And again, what the athletes don't have is time. You really don't have the kind of, you either got somebody ready to take your place, these other things that might be going on. It definitely is a challenge when it comes to,
Bob, you're right about basketball. I think I did pick basketball as the best athletes. I flew up from New Orleans to the Brooklyn Nets Bulls game, and that was a game in which Thibodeau was really in a bad, angry mood. But that was when I
thought he was always in a bad, angry mood, this guy.
But he pretty much is, and I've seen him actually smile.
Good.
This one, there was no pretense of smiling, none. I mean, he was like, if you clapped your hands, you probably would have exploded right through the ceiling. He's
intense.
He was so intense. But he had Noah out, and Boozer was out. And, of course, Rose was out, and let's see, Radmanovich was out, and somebody else was out. I mean, he had only four guys on the bench, and then it looked, I know that Dang is playing with all kinds of leg injuries, and he hurt himself a little bit and came out for a while. So there are three guys on the bench. And so when you talk about having to get these players back fast, it's crazy.
Yes, the genius.
I believe they had a game the next day, too, in Atlanta.
Yes.
So they had to think about that.
You're right, Chris. Yeah.
These are the kinds of schedules that are virtually impossible with the travel and the, you know, the 80 games a year. I want to just a little sidelight. Hey, you got to be very excited, Rick. I know that you spent a million years as an alum of Northwestern watching them getting pounded around as a semi-doormat. What a job this Fitzgerald, this coach, has done for them.
Oh, my God.
What a turnaround. Even their basketball program, one of our neighbors, unfortunately, Drew Crawford, got hurt this year. Otherwise, I think that really hurt him. But talk a little bit about that football program at your alma mater.
The thing that we have to remember is that Northwestern went down for a long time there, and the reason it went down, in my opinion, was that people were looking at exactly what Northwestern should have been praising as the good things about the school. They were looking at that as detriments. You don't want to go to Northwestern. They go to class.
Right.
Small private school. They've got, you're going to have to study there. You're going to get a good degree. And then, of course, they say you're going to lose. But what Pat Fitzgerald did when he came, he wanted to go to Notre Dame as a player, but they wouldn't have him. And Northwestern is full of players like that who either have a chip on their shoulder or were not quite good enough to go to Ohio State or Michigan or Notre Dame. That was the case for
all the wonderful attributes of a college like the Northwestern, when they would say, can you recruit the kind of players that you can compete? You know, there might be a couple of schools in the country, Stanford, Duke might be examples. Northwestern's another great example, but they really have turned the corner with this coach.
Well, they have. What they've done is they've made the educational part, with the change in the economy, the change in the sociology of modern times, where people are thinking about their futures very seriously. They're saying, hey, this is worth $55,000 a year. You know, sure, maybe you shouldn't get paid, or we don't believe in paying athletes. That's a whole separate story. But, kid, if you go here and you're redshirted and you get in 1 year of postgraduate work, which you are likely to do if you play as a redshirt senior, we're talking well over $250,000, maybe $300,000 that your degree is worth. You've got a network here. Northwestern is such a prestigious academic school that why would you not come here? And it's actually working for Pat Fitzgerald. And in recruiting, he's also got this integrity that other schools don't have. He said, we start courting you. We tell you we want you. We offer you a scholarship as a junior. We mean it.
Are they going to be able to keep him, Rick?
They do. And they had a kid who hurt his knee, missed his whole senior season, and Fitz said, doesn't matter. In fact, what's his name? Christian Jones is on the team now. And they said, all the other offers the kid had in high school, they dried up. And he took them. And, you know, if you get hurt as a freshman, they never take away your scholarship. But he also believes if you start going out and messing around looking at other schools after you've agreed to come here, we're done with you.
Yeah, he's a man of integrity. You know, Drew Crawford's dad, Dan Crawford, the great NBA referee, you know, is one of our neighbors in the Naperville area. He talked a lot about that $250,000 scholarship worth at a school like Northwestern, how important it was when it came to being recruiting and that whole scheme of things. But Fitzgerald made a point about that, didn't he? He said, are you committed? I expect you to keep your word.
Yes.
Good luck to him.
And he also, he has brought up to them more than once, hey, look, you're getting $50,000 a year. And of course it goes up as I speak. It's probably up to 60 grand, but he's very much aware of it. But anyway, it's sort of a mature business deal, in which they're not playing these stupid games that so many of these other, sleazy colleges do, where they recruit players who've already said they're going somewhere else. They've done it. Saban has done it at Ohio State.
And then the coach splits. You know, the coach gets his team to a bowl game. Like Kelly was at Cincinnati. They don't even hang around to be with the team. They're gone already to recruit. I think that's Bush League.
Well, I'm telling you something. If I were a kid in the Chicago area and I could get into Northwestern, and I think if you work hard, you can. It's not like you have to be a genius to get in. I would go there in a heartbeat. I mean, it would just, the network, the friends you're going to have, and now Fitz is serious. He's not just going for a Big Ten championship. He wants a national championship. People may laugh at that, but
I don't think they're laughing anymore.
They got their first bowl win in decades, yes. And they've certainly leapt ahead of Illinois and Minnesota and Purdue and several other Big Ten teams.
They could play anybody.
Well, this year they lost to a couple games they shouldn't have lost, and they would have been, they could have been Big Ten champs easily. Ohio State was, ineligible, and my God, what a juggernaut they have and will always have. You have to remember, Northwestern only graduates about, 1,500 students a year, maybe 1,700 tops. And you get a big state school like Ohio State or Michigan, and they
the football factory.
10,000, 15,000.
The football, yes. You know, Rick, we're almost out of time. I can't believe we had such great reception on the train. I really want to thank you. Rick Tellner, again, has been our guest this evening on The Sports Doctor. I really want to thank you. It's been a fascinating conversation. I'd love you to come back anytime in the future. And good luck with your...
Congratulations on the 20 years, Doc.
Thank you very much.
I'll tell you what, seriously, and I'll probably be in to see you about getting some more orthotics now that I'm...
I'm still looking for you, man. I'm still looking for you. So thanks again. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Right, Chris?
Yes. I don't know about your train, Rick, but our train is in. We're out of time.
All right, Chris. Good talk to you and Bob.
Thanks so much for being with us. Previous shows, last 3 years, are at sportsdoctorradio.com. Dr. Bob Weil, see you next week.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
I'm Chris Fox. Please tune in next week to another edition of The Sports Doctor.